What I'm going to talk about this morning is some aspects we can learn by studying these objects of deep brains and oriented folds in a geometry of conifolds, and some of the relevant physics on the side of geometry, where we can see some deformations of singularities through the non-perturbative quantum. So, kind of things I'm going to talk about this morning will be geometry generated by deep brains with a lower supersymmetry, where we have kind of conifold. And I'm going to also talk about putting some oriented folds in these geometry. And then I'm going to talk about how one can discuss charges of the oriented folds. I'm going to talk a little bit more in detail what these oriented folds and how we talk about them. But although these oriented folds are not dynamical objects as like D-brains, they do carry charges. And for example, the most complete way of discussing D-brain charges is in terms of K-theory. And you can also invoke same K-theory to discuss oriented fold charges, so I'm going to talk about them. Now, more interesting things happen when we have D-brains in non-trivial backgrounds, and the one we do have control is group space. For example, we can discuss using boundary West Zumino-Witten models, D-brains in group spaces, and we, in a similar fashion, we'll try to discuss how to put oriented folds in group space. Now, coming back to the original discussion of dual gauge theory, I'm going to talk about how the non-perturbative quantum effects eventually leads to the resolution of naked singularities. Okay, and this work is based on some of the works I've done with Sang Jin Shin and Chang Yun An, and some of the works I'm trying to do still on. Okay, so everybody knows nowadays that the We are interested in strong coupling limits of certain theories, and the type 2A theory is M-theory. Now, we can also talk about the strong coupling limits of gauge theories with sufficiently high supersymmetry, n equal 4, for example, and itself dual. Now, large N expansion of this theory has a nice interpretation of type 2B string theory, and in terms of D-brains in flat space-time. Of course, D-brains, being BPS objects, have a break supersymmetry into half of the original supersymmetry. Now, we are interested in discussing theories with lower supersymmetry, and one way to achieve that is to put D-brains in non-trivial space-time. To lower supersymmetry into the half of the original supersymmetry, you can put these D-brains in orbifolds. One quarter of that we can achieve by putting them in conifolds, which you can look as kind of perturbations of these theories on orbifold. And these are the starting points of discussing D-brains in more complicated and more realistic backgrounds of Calabi-Yau manifolds. Now, the reason why D-brains at these conifolds with conical singularities interesting is that these singularities bring in new massless states, and gauge symmetry can be enhanced. And actually, these are the points where transition to new manifolds at the point where we have transition of into new manifold, we develop conical singularities, and this one we can control. And string theory in general is not local in the sense that strings are extended objects. For those generic string behavior, it's very difficult to control. However, the space-time singularity itself, when we have space-time singularity, then the generic stringy behavior becomes localized. So it's a kind of very interesting generic string physics come out of that. So we are now interested in putting D-brains in these kind of backgrounds where is a metric takes this form. When this part is a sphere, this is no longer a singular, it's just a coordinate transformation into spherical coordinates. However, when we have a more general Einstein metric, it has developed singularity at r equals 0. Now, so we can put n parallel D-brains in this background, and we can get metric and all these kind of things. And we can count unbroken supersymmetry, which we can check that it has one quarter of this supersymmetry carried by the D-brain. So the simplest example of conical singularity is a Calabi-Yau 3 manifold of this form in terms of four complex variables. So it's a space complex manifold of six dimensions, and it's smooth everywhere except the point where all the coordinates vanish, and it's actually doubly singular. Of course, one can generalize it to the cases where we have higher singularities, but for simplicity, most of the physics is carried by the cases of quadratic singularity. Now, the base of the cone, which I mean is that the kind of cross-section of the conical geometry is this one. Now, the geometry of that is basically S2 cross S3. By this simple analysis, we can check that. So we have S2 over S3 as the geometry of the base of the cone, which is a cross-section of the cone. Now, the metric of this base can be determined as a Ricci-Flatt-Einstein metric. Of course, the solution of these can be written in a quite general way. However, only for the cases where the integer, in terms of, okay, so you can write down a quite general metric with the two integers P and Q. However, only for the cases where P and Q equals 1 preserves the, is a supersymmetry preserving background. So one is interested, in that kind of a conifold, and that's called T1, 1. Okay. So this is kind of a configuration one is interested in, and one is interested in putting D-brains in these kind of backgrounds. So, now these kind of conical singularities can be deformed. The simplest way is to put, instead of 0, one put some positive value here. What that makes is that prevents, sort of takes out the conical singular point where all the z-coordinates vanished. Remember that the point where all the z-coordinates vanished was the singular point. However, by having this epsilon non equals 0, this is taken out from your space-time. So your space-time now becomes deformed like this. And no longer singular here. Now, when you have this kind of deformation, you have S3 at the tip, as one can check. And there's another way of blowing up singularity, which is called in mathematical literature as a resolution. And that is done by introducing these coordinates like this, and then so we had four complex coordinates. We can introduce a 2x2 matrix like that, and the conifold is geometry is when we take determinant of that equal to 0. Now you can have zij equals aibj. Since it's a product of two complex coordinates, you have kind of U1 symmetry here. because you can multiply each variables with opposite phases. So that gives you U1 symmetry. So although the tip of the although the tip becomes S3, this U1 symmetry makes it actually S2. So what this resolution does when we put AI square minus BJ square is equal to delta, you have at the tip of the cone S2 geometry compared to deformation when we have S3 at the tip of the cone. So this is the resolution. So we have two types of smoothing out the conifold is by deforming or resolving. So we have deformed conifold or resolved conifold, and each one is defined by this this curve, and the other one is defined by this curve. So you just remember these two. So this is a kind of a basic mathematical backgrounds we can think about. Okay. Now, what has been done was, by Klebanov and Witten some years ago, was to consider n parallel D3 brains put at the place at the tip of the cone. And by the argument we have seen before, the gauge theory will be n equal 1 superconformal field theory, because D brain was breaking 1/2 of the supersymmetry, conifold itself is breaking 1/4, 1/8 is left, so we have n equal 1 superconformal field theory. Now, the gauge group is SUN cross SUN, so it's a product gauge group, not a simple one, but a product gauge group. And the matter content is that we have chiral superfields AI and BJ. Now, what the representation of these fields are is that in terms of the first gauge group, it's N, and in terms of it's a quark, and in terms of the second gauge group, it's anti-quark. So, and the BJ is that it's anti-quark in the first gauge group and quark in the second gauge group. So we have SUN cross SUN gauge theory with this kind of matter in by fundamental representation. Now, since this is n equal 1 supersymmetric field theory, one can think of superpotential. And the usual way of writing down the superpotential is to check all the quantum symmetries and think about the most general invariant under the quantum symmetry, residual quantum symmetry. And you can check that it has SU2 cross SU2 cross U1 all symmetry. And the most general one you can write down in terms of these chiral superfields is this superalgebra, trace AI, BJ, AK, AJ, BL. But this actually is reminiscent of the defining curve of the conifold. So AIBJ together is JIJ, and this is nothing but determinant of a 2x2 matrix. So one realized that the moduli space of this gauge theory realized on D brains at the conifold tip is nothing reflects the geometry, the background geometry. So the moduli space is exactly conical here. One simple way of understanding why this gauge theory has this product gauge group and then the by fundamental representation is in terms of the T-dual picture. So remember, this was a theory with the D3 brains, so type 2B theory. So we T-dualize it into type 2A. And actually, this conical geometry, when you T-dualize it, it was shown by Ogden and Vaffa some time ago that it becomes a configuration of parallel NS brains, NS5 brains. Now, in the case of N equal 2 supersymmetric background, you have parallel NS5 brains, but Further rotating one of the NS5 brains, it lowers the supersymmetry into one half of the original parallel NS5 brains. Because of the quadratic singularity, you need a pair of that, like this. And this is a T-dual of the conical background. And D brains, D3 brains is made into D4 brains like this. And actually, this NS5 brain is supposedly to be identified with this NS5 brain. That is why we get SUN times SUN gauge theory realized on the D4 brains. Now, an open string which is suspended between this one and this one gives you, so an open string here looks as if it's a quark. And another one coming around here gives you this AI and a BJ chiral superfields we have seen before. So by taking this type 2A picture and realizing that it is the T-dual picture of this conical geometry, we see that the matter and gauge group content quite easily, quite intuitively. Okay. Now, what one can do, okay, so whenever there is kind of orbifold singularity, conifold being a kind of generalization of that, you obtain these objects of fractional brains. And in terms of the type 2B picture, type 2A pictures, the fractional brain is something which is suspended only one of these intervals, not both. And that fractional brains give you, instead of SUN cross SUN with same rank of the gauge groups, now we can have different ranks on this side and this side. However, this you can show that these fractional brains break conformal invariance, because if you calculate the beta functions of the theory, it's no longer vanishing. So only in the case where you have same number of brains here and here, D brains, you have conformal invariance. Okay. All right. So this is calculate the using the standard formula by Schiffman and company of supersymmetric gauge theory. You can check that the beta functions, or what the beta functions are when you have SUN plus M. So I'm thinking of a configuration where you have M fractional brains on one side and just N whole D brains. Then coming from the first gauge factor, you have this kind of beta function, and this one is the second one, and then you can show that it breaks conformal invariance when you have M not equal to zero. Now, all these has been spelled out in the work of recent work, already not that recent, it's about a year old or even more, by Klebanov-Stressler, where they, and previous works of before that, actually, these kind of observation was made following the works of Klebanov and Witten about 3 years ago. Okay. Now, one observation that Klebanov and Stressler made was that actually the superpotential we have seen before, which was the most general one you can write down, preserving all this symmetry, which was nothing but the conical symmetry, can be modified by non-perturbative effect. And we know very well that in the N equal 1 supersymmetric gauge theories, we get this non-perturbative superpotential by the name of ADS superpotential, Affleck-Dyan and Zeiberg's. And the general feature of that is that it's 1 over determinant. Of course, only in the cases where the number of flavors is less than number of colors and these kinds of things. But if this condition is met, actually this kind of non-perturbative superpotential is generated. And that is actually coming from summing all the instanton effects in this gauge theory. So suppose you add these two. This was a determinant. This is 1 over determinant. And you realize that the vacuum of this theory is no longer at the point where this determinant vanished. Remember that the vacuum was determined as a determinant of this guy equal to 0. So that determined the conical singular moduli space. However, adding this non-perturbative superpotential brings the vacuum of the theory into the case where you have determinant not equal to 0. This is increasing and this is decreasing, so you have a potential in between where this is it takes non the minimum of this superpotential is where you have non-vanishing determinant. So you realize that the proper moduli space, which is which takes care of all the non-perturbative quantum effects, is now described by the deformed conifold. So, although it was not easy to see in the string theory picture, now you realize that the dual gauge theory provides you a way of handling these kind of singularities arising in string theory. Okay. So, and this kind of things happen quite often in discussing large n dualities. For example, Gopakuma and Vafa discussed that considered a large n UN Chern-Simons gauge theory and found that it's dual to closed string closed topological string on resolved conifold. And these kind of things are, so you have a theory defined on deformed conifolds, which is kind of related to a resolved theories on a resolved conifold. And you can actually argue that the picture they provide is a kind of mirror theory to what we have been discussing so far by Klebanov, following Witten and Klebanov and Klebanov-Witten. And what the role of fractional brain here is when we have D6 brains which wrap around these S3 and that is dual to resolved conifold geometry with actually no brains but just with the fluxes left over. So this is in terms of these topological string theory. Now, more recently, there has been some interest in discussing M-theory lift of what has been going on here. And here, the analog, higher dimensional analog of this conifold is played. The role of the conifold in the higher dimensional M-theory is played by G2 holonomy Calabi-Yau's. There you can realize, it has kind of a base manifold of S3 cross S3. And here you have similar features of flops between these two geometries. And actually, Witten and Atiya, it seems, have found a way of relating all these different things arising here. Now, to come back to what we have been doing, now, we have found that the gauge theory on tip of the D-brain, tip of the conifold is by SUN cross SUN. But suppose you are interested in discussing cases of SO gauge groups or symplectic gauge groups, which were discussed in the case of dynamical supersymmetry, you have to introduce an object called oriented fold. Now, oriented fold is nothing but, you can define it as kind of operationally as a gauging of discrete symmetries in string theory. So Oriented fold defines a string theory, OP plane, suspended in the direction of 0, 1, 1, 2, P, gives you a background manifold of this form. So it induces reflection symmetry in the transverse direction. So inversion of all coordinates in the transverse direction is induced. On top of that, you need to have orientation reversal of the wall sheet of fundamental string. And when P takes a particular value, so 0 or 1, mode 4, or you don't have to do anything more, but for the cases where P equals 2 and 3, mode 4, you have to also introduce minus 1 to the Fermion number. Now, as I said, this object is introduced when you want to discuss SO and SP gauge groups. And actually, the moduli space of string compactification not only has these conical singularities, but you also have to discuss all the conical singular points with all the discrete symmetries. You also have to discuss all the conical singularities modded out by all the possible discrete symmetries. That's what Witten is telling us. So the other non-trivial examples are the ones which have these kind of oriented fold planes in Calabi-Yau manifolds. So as a simple exercise, we first want to discuss putting oriented folds in conifold singularities. Now, to discuss this properly, one has to talk about all the background NS and RR fields. Now, this is same thing as what we have seen before. Now, what this oriented fold does to these RR and RR field and then NS field is that it flips the sign of the NS field, but it flips only some of the NS Ramon fields when for particular values of P. Now, also, this oriented fold action has two types of possible actions on chain Peyton factors. And depending on how it acts on these chain Peyton factors, when it acts as an identity, you have you end up getting SO gauge group. But when you have J where this squares into minus 1, you get the USP group. So that's how you end up getting two types of gauge groups, not just one, but two types, by two different possible actions on chain Peyton factors. And by the actions on chain Peyton factors, we distinguish OP planes into OP minus and OP plus. And this obviously gives you SO2N, and this gives you USP2N. The reason why you get the two N's here and here is that this this reflection symmetry on the space-time gives you mirror images of D-brains across the oriented fold. That's why you get these odd numbers. Now, you can also discuss the case where one of the D-brain is stuck at the oriented fold plane itself, and that one leads to SO2N plus 1 theory. But at the moment, naively, you can say that the mirror image doubles the number of D-brains. You can see. Now, so far, it looks as if it's something which doesn't carry any charge or any anything, but actually, you can talk about the charges of oriented fold. You can even talk about tensions of RL charges. Actually, this kind of and the thing is that it carries either positive or negative charges, negative tensions, you can say. Compared to DP brains, you can count you can measure the orienting fold charges in terms of DP brain charges, and you if you go through, since these actually orienting folds are objects realizable in perturbative string theory, you can calculate using that some of the diagrams, and you can obtain the tensions and RL charges to be minus or plus 2 to the p minus 5. So here you get, depending on the numbers, p less than 5, you see that you get fractional RL charges compared measured in terms of D brain charges. So you can calculate these kind of amplitudes in perturbative string theory and then obtain this number. Now, this now since one is interested in getting putting D brains and orienting folds in the non-trivial background, one is interested in how D brains couple to the background. And through a series of works discussing how the gravitational and gauge anomalies are taken care of, the West-Zumino coupling of DP brains was written down in this rather general form, where you have to invoke a roof genus of the background manifold. And I mean, I'm not going to discuss all the details here, but the thing is that you can, just as you can discuss West-Zumino coupling of DP brains in a non-trivial background, you can also discuss West-Zumino coupling of OP plane. Now, the one difference is that this oriented fold couples only through gravitationally. It doesn't couple to gauge fields. So that's why this form is missing here, and it only couples to gravitation, where this is a Hertzsprung polynomial, okay, and this is tangent and normal bundle and all sorts of this. Actually, this is, I think, well discussed in this big review by Richard Savos, written some time ago, right? Yeah, I mean. Now, when you want to measure the charges of D brains, the usual thing is to consider a holonomy. So you can just in the case of electromagnetic field charges and so on. So you can calculate the holonomy of this NS field and RL fields like this, and you realize that for some okay. Now what people realize that is that this holonomy doesn't give you the complete charges of the D brains. Now, before going into what you can do, when you have orienting folds, then your space-time has become projective space, RP, because of the orbifolding effect of the orienting fold, and you can calculate the holonomy of the NS field and then Ramon field. Depending on what the value you have, actually you end up getting holonomy elements to be Z2. So these are the ones where these fields have discrete torsions, and this Z2 value further distinguishes the orienting fold into something more, especially the holonomy of the RR field brings in two additional objects called O tilde, OP plus minus. So remember that we had OP minus and OP plus. Actually, those are the two distinct, two different elements of this discrete torsion, and this one is, you get these two. So for the case of P less than 6, you have four different types of oriented fold plane. So OP minus, OP plus, OP plus tilde, OP minus tilde. So that's kind of simple mnemonic thing you can have in back of your mind. Now, So what is the proper way of discussing the charges of D-brains? So suppose D-brains have wrapped around is wrapped in a space-time of X with dimension P, so you have complete wrapping of a DP brain. What Witten has argued some years ago is that in type 2A string theory, it is described by K group, K minus X, and in type 2B by KX. Now, Hojava also argued that the RR fluxes can also be classified KX for type 2A and K minus X by type 2B. Now, what do you mean by all these K plus and K minus, K and K minus and so on? Actually, KX is set of equivalence classes or pair of bundles on X. So suppose you put some D-brains and anti-D-brains in this manifold. These D-brains carry gauge bundles, and you can discuss the equivalent classes of them, and that gives you this set K of X. Now, you can also have higher K groups. So in general, you can discuss K of minus of NX. I mean, I cannot go through all the details because it's written in nowadays many good reviews also, which I already mentioned. but so the only thing I just want to say is that you can the way of discussing the charges by in type 2A string theory on a non-trivial background is discussed by K theory or higher K group, and you can define all these. And all these KNs are related by KN minus N is related by K minus N minus 2 by this periodicity found by Bott. And suppose K minus 1 of S2N is 0 and K minus 1 of S2N minus 2N plus 1 is Zn. You can have these and then you can use various periodicity, you can have various sequences and you can find K theory group. And therefore, you can find the charges of carried by these D brains in non-trivial background. That's what. Now, remember that we said we could discuss the charges of oriented folds. So now, suppose we have a space-time of the form Rp plus 1 cross some manifold modded out by some discrete action, G. So, for this, we actually need the equivalent G equivalent K theory, where the equivalence class comes from for the action of the discrete group G, and the oriented fold charges actually can be discussed in terms of this G equivalent K theory charges, and depend. that in the case of Z2, in the case of modding out by a cyclic group, you can have Z2, you can have real K theory group KR or quaternion K theory group KH. Okay, and some of the examples for the cases of sphere that has been calculated quite recently. So. This is what has been done. Now, so there's another interest in now let us switch gears a little bit and think about some D-brains in group manifolds. Now, the reason why these are interesting is that these can be discussed by gauged West-Suminowitz models. West-Suminowitz models and also gauging of them. And we do have nice conformal field theory of them. Since D-brains define the boundary condition in theory. In this theory, we can discuss D-brains in terms of boundary conformal field theories. West Sumino-Witten model, and for example, in the case of boundary gauge West Sumino-Witten model, you need to impose boundary condition on the available currents in the theory. That in turn gives you some conditions of the possible boundary states. And you can, in general, solve, in the case of a West Sumino-Witten model, you can solve what these guys are. And using that, actually using some one-point function, you can calculate the possible D-brains charges in these group spaces. And actually, in these group spaces, D-brains cannot be in arbitrary... cannot be positioned arbitrarily. They have to be on a particular orbit called the conjugacy classes of the group. The reason why you can have not arbitrary configuration of D-brains in these group spaces is that here you generically have the B fields here. What I mean is that here, in order to have this group space configuration, you must have consistent, self-consistent B field configuration, and this gives you this further restricts where the D brains are located. For example, in a case of S3. SU2 group space, that you can have K minus 1 stable D2 brains wrapped around the core joint orbits of this sphere. So, and K is given by the level of the West Sumino-Witten model. And in anti de Sitter space, you can have these kind of D brain configurations. Okay. Now, so what are the D-brain charges in this group space? As I said, here, unlike in the case of a flat space, you must have non-vanishing NSNS 3-form field. And the proper setup to discuss the charges of D-brains in this theories with non-vanishing three-form field, and it is the theory called twisted K-group. So you have to have a generalization of K-groups to the case of a so-called twisted K-group. Now, this is when this NSNS three-form field is of torsion class, so-called torsion class. And what this exactly is given in this paper by Witten and Baryons in ADS space and so on. This boils down to the ordinary K group. Okay? So it's something you...
Question?
Yes?
What do you say becomes the ordinary K group?
Torsion, when it's of torsion class? But doesn't it give you the same
gives you the
same charges?
Same charges.
Okay, maybe there's some sort.
Your bundles still won't be
open. Oh yeah, that you do have that. But as far as the charges are concerned, I'm interested in the charge space. I mean, as far as the charges are concerned, I think. Yeah, then I think it gives you the same answer. That's what actually I'm just You see, I'm not. I'm just focusing on just classifying what the charges are of these D-brains. And as far for that purpose, I think this is... but it does have these subtleties, I mean, which I'm actually not quite do not know much actually, and I think you are the more expert on this subject. Yeah. But for the case of the Wesumino width model, this three form field is non-torsion type. So you have to invoke the twisted K group, and some of the results are known for the simple cases. And actually, these kind of results can be compared to the results of a boundary conformal field theory. Now, so it would be quite interesting actually to relate all these results to the cases of a boundary conformal field theory, and okay. And you can also try to put some oriented folds in group space. Now, what here you have to put oriented folds you cannot put them in an arbitrary way, but you can put in a, for example, fixed planes. Okay, so you can think of having some discrete actions on these spaces, group spaces. And of course, that will bring in D-brains carrying these SO and SP gauge groups. And D-brain charges of them can be described by not the twisted K groups of SUN, but now SO or SPs. Okay. And actually, this you need to discuss SO3, for example, Wesumino width model. It's kind of orbifold SU2 Wesumino width model. And one of the experts on this subject is sitting here. Yes, Mark Walton has worked some time ago on this subject. And actually, the boundary conformal field theory of that is quite relevant for discussing D-brain charges on here. Now, again, one needs a twisted real and quaternionic K-theory group to discuss oriented fold charges of that, and I do not have the classification yet. I mean, I'm working on this. But that these objects will be quite relevant for those discussing those. All right. Now, so you can discuss all these objects. Now, coming back to the gauge theory, let's just come to our original track of discussing non-perturbative gauge theory realized on a conifold and oriented folded conifold tip. And the spectrum of these SO and SP gauge group is... okay, so you want to discuss the spectrum of that and the non-perturbative superpotential there. So, first thing is that you want to introduce some oriented fold action in conifold. And since oriented folding is quite clear in the type 2A picture, where you have this suspended D4 brains between NS5 brains, yes, NS5. Suspended. And I'm going to introduce O4 plane parallel to D4 brains. Okay? Yeah. I arrived 2 a.m. this morning, so I'm still... So what the configuration here is that I want to introduce oriented fold parallel to D4 brains here. And then the strategy is to have T-dual picture of this type 2A picture and build our oriented fold in a conifold geometry. Okay, so that's our very simple strategy. So what that does is that, so you remember that in the conifold we had these spheres, which was a topology of the base of the conifold. How that comes about is that you basically wrap, you compactify this NS5, and the two directions which this denotes, which is not shared by these, gives rise to a complex plane, and you can compactify that, and you can also do the same thing for NS5 plane, NS5 brain. And actually, that brings in some spheres. This is along the NS5 brain, and this is along the NS5 prime brain. And you have two S2s. And actually, since we do have oriented fold, it gives a Z2 action along the transverse directions of 0, 1, 2, 3, 6, which is 4, 7, and, 4, 5, 7, and etc. 4, 5, 7, 8, 9. So you have Zi going to minus Zi, Xi going to minus Xi along these directions. And what that does back in the spheres is that nothing but it's kind of it's an antipodal mapping of S2 and S3. How you actually have S3 is that you also have this put one of the directions along X6, which is this direction, as part of your S3. Okay, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm putting three transparency on one, and it should be quite confusing. But what I'm saying is that this simple action of orientative 04 plane gives you antipodal mapping in the S2 and S3 in the base of the cone. Okay, and that's quite. I mean, that's what you sort of expect after a while. Now. Now, of course, I mean the you can invoke a Hopf vibration to do this, but after a while you realize that the reason why we invoke a Hopf vibration is that we want to relate it to four complex variables, and after a while you realize that all these effect of the oriented fold is basically mapping all the Zi's. You remember that the Kony fold was realized by four complex coordinates, z1 squared plus z2 squared plus z3 squared plus z4 squared equals zero. And in terms of these original variables, the oriented fold action is nothing but zi going to zi bar. Okay? Now, so now what you can do is discuss gauge theory on this oriented folded Kony fold. And actually, you can discuss some configuration like SO and SP cross product of SO and SP gauge group. Now, you must have product of SO and SP, not SO and SO or SP and SP, is that when an oriented fold crosses NS5 brain, because of the NS flux produced by the NS5 brain, the oriented fold flips from SO minus OP minus brain to OP plus brain, and vice versa. So we must necessarily have a product gauge group of SP and SO, not SO or SO or SP or SP. We must have these kind of things. So we can discuss the classical superpotential of this theory. And just like the case of theory without any oriented fold, you can also have a non-trivial, non-perturbative superpotential. And lo and behold, the moduli space is now also lifted from a Kony fold tip realized by these superfields into a deformed Kony fold, just like we have seen. So what that does is that make our oriented folded Kony fold into, again, a deformed Kony fold. However, here, the oriented fold action is still at the tip of the cone. So, we realize that the oriented fold action resides outside the space-time itself. And actually, that is quite reminiscent of what happened in the M-theory curve case. When Witten realized the strong coupling limit of D-brain suspended between NS brains, and he made one single M5 brain configuration, and with a theory with genus G gave rise to G minus one. SU G minus one or SU, what was it? With single hole, it was S. Okay, so with a single one hole, it one genus, it had SU two. Yes, okay. So SU G plus one gauge theory. Yes. Now, in order to realize the theories of SO gauge group, one has to introduce oriented fold action, and that is that particular action also resides outside of this M5 theory configuration. What I'm trying to say is that you can lift this into M theory, so you start to have these kind of theory, because this along this direction is the 11th direction, grown by the strong coupling. So, in order to have SUN gauge group, you must have certain number of genus here. Now, in order to have N equal 1 theory, you must have all these on top of each other. Now, and this is, again, you have a circle for the 11th direction. Now, in order to have SO gauge group, you must introduce oriented fold action through the center of this kind of pipe. And this should reside outside of the space-time itself, because this M5 brain, this is no longer on the space-time. Now, so this is exactly the T-dual picture of what we have here. The conifold the oriented fold action has left the space-time itself, and we end up getting a kind of deformed conifold. So what I try to, so this is kind of a end of what I'm going to say, and the moral of what all these diverse things is that we can discuss D-brains and also oriented fold in the various backgrounds, and we have to invoke some of the heavy machinery. Although it sounds quite heavy in the beginning, it actually becomes quite simple when you look in it long enough. And whenever there is a kind of singularity developing, you have a resolution of them, and different type of singularities are all related by these non-trivial transitions and so on, and the kind of theory I described here is quite can be regarded as a toy model of a more realistic theories of string theory on Calabi-Yau's on G2 exceptional holonomies and whatnot. And that's what I'm going to say. Thank you. No question. Yes.
How did you get the superpotential in this case?
How did we get the superpotential in this case? Yeah, okay, so just, okay, yeah, I was really it's the same technique used over and over in the supersymmetric gauge theory. First, you have to identify the particle spectrum, and then you have to identify all the discrete symmetries, and then you also have to have the so-called matching conditions, because you have different scales here, okay? And after some, and so in general, this is you can write down all the ones which are invariant under this under these discrete symmetries, okay? I, J, and these kind of things, and then you can write down some combination of them, okay? And that's how you obtain that. Now, the case of symplectic or orthogonal gauge group is not 1 over determinant, but it's 1 over Pfaffian, for example, because of this Z2 symmetry, and that's known, I mean, in the case of a symplectic group. So you can utilize that. So by using all these various knowledges, we could write down the... Yes. And I actually forgot what we did here. Yeah, but that's...
You mean it is some simple generalization of U and K's? Is there
simple.
Any technical point?
Why we did this? Well, actually, yeah. We know... We haven't seen a written down example where you have a superpotential of a product gauge group. So that getting that was one simple thing, simple but non-trivial thing we had to do. So that's why, yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah.